accession number 19090, Reel 3.
Mr. Smith, Reel 3.
Okay.
You were saying about the Folgore not being able to get away.
The Folgore had no means of getting away in the end and had to give themselves up. But for me, personally, this aftermath of victory came to rather an unpleasant end because I'd been feeling unwell for 2 or 3 days, and now I started developing a very, very high temperature, and the desert sort of swam round before my eyes, and I really became unfit to command. The battalion MO immediately diagnosed jaundice, which was the plague of both sides in the desert, Middle East jaundice, and really it was most unpleasant. I felt terribly ill, and I was evacuated. And I jolted down the desert in an ambulance, sharing the ambulance with a rather cheerful German soldier, oddly enough, who was quite glad to be out of action, I think. And that ensued then. I was taken into hospital in Cairo, the Scottish General. And when I started getting better, I was evacuated again up to Jerusalem, and that was a really rather pleasant break in Palestine. And in the course of time, round about Christmas time, I journeyed back again and rejoined the battalion in the Delta, because Montgomery hadn't been able to take all that number of infantry on with him for supply reasons. And the battalion, the old 44th Division was broken up. And we went, the 4th West Kent, we went to the 5th Indian Division, who were preparing to go east to fight the Japs. The 5th Indian were a good division. They'd been in Eritrea. They'd been in the desert. And so we joined 161st Brigade as the British battalion. In Indian divisions, there's one British battalion to every two Indian in a brigade. And after Christmas, we journeyed by road, what you could call it road, we journeyed in trucks up through Palestine, across the desert, Sinai Desert, and then up into what in those days was called Transjordania, and so along the oil pipeline to Iraq. And we camped outside Baghdad. The Iraqis weren't particularly friendly. They'd recently staged a rising against the British. And Baghdad was smelly and full of thieves who would almost do anything to get hold of a rifle. So we had to dig our arms tent down 6 feet at least and keep a very strong guard over the weapons. Well, we were part then of what they called Pi Force, Persia and Iraq. Force. And after doing various exercises for the rest of the winter, when the German threat to the Caucasus diminished with the defense of Stalingrad, we were able to be moved and journeyed down to Basra, went on another troop ship, a troop ship called the Empire Trooper, which had been a German Baltic cruise boat. The Empire Trooper had, I think, really rather good accommodation. We weren't so crowded on that. We embarked at Basra, and in due course arrived at Bombay. Now, arrival at Bombay was greeted with a band to welcome us. The 5th Indian Division had made quite a name for itself, and then we embarked on a train which proceeded with an enormous engine to clank its way across the central plains of India. Until arriving eventually in Bihar, the state of Bihar near Ranchi, and there we camped in the open air just before the monsoon burst, luckily. This would have been round about June. Then the monsoon came, which was quite an experience. Rained and rained and rained. Everywhere became flooded. Snakes suddenly appeared from nowhere out of their flooded holes. And you had, if you were sensible, you shook your boots in the morning before you put them on, because there's a nasty little snake called a krait, which had a habit of getting into boots and biting, with a very nasty bite indeed. So where possible, we went on training exercises. And finally, we ended up in a jungle. There was a reserve forest fairly near. And we acclimatized ourselves to jungle conditions in that forest. The two Indian battalions in the brigade then came back, having had a bit of leave, and we prepared ourselves for going down further into Burma. Well, this happened at the end of December. Happened at the end of December, and we embarked on yet another troop ship. A coal-fired troop ship, which eventually deposited us at Chittagong on the far side of the Bay of Bengal.
I think it was called the Ethiopia.
The Ethiopia, that's right. Yes, it's in the book, isn't it? Now, from Chittagong, we entrained and journeyed 50 miles south by train to Doazari. And then we marched. And in order to avoid the heat and to avoid being spotted by enemy aircraft, we marched at night. And we marched 200 miles, 20 miles a day, for the next 10 days. And that was nice in many ways, marching at night, swinging along in the warm darkness and through clouds of fireflies, along an earthen track, then we were ferried across at Chong, which is an arm of the sea reaching up into the land, and on the other side eventually reached the forward area. Now that was right about the new year. Now the countryside in the Arakan along the coast consisted of a lot of jungle-clad hills interspersed with paddy fields. And our brigade took over the sector from the coast inland to a range of much bigger hills, which were called the Mayo Range. On the other side of the Mayo Range, the 7th Indian Division was advancing parallel with us. Connected by a track which had been bulldozed out of the hillside, to take even tanks. This was called the Nacogdoches Pass. It's a pretty vital link for the 7 Div. Well, now, our first encounter with the enemy consisted of the battalion infiltrating round behind one of these Japanese-held positions, whilst one of the Indian battalions, the 4th, 7th Rajputs, put in an attack at night. And the idea being that the battalion would cut off the Japs as they withdrew. Well, this was quite successful, really, because we got into position behind the Japs outpost, and without being spotted. The Rajputs had quite a tough fight of it, and eventually, you know, they came up against these Japanese bunker positions, which were very difficult to deal with. And eventually some of the Japs came back through us and were duly accounted for. They'd been our first victims of the Japanese war. But soon after that, we had a bit of a tragedy. By this time, I was in command of Headquarter Company, which consisted, of course, of all the specialist troops, the mortars and the carriers and the signals, pioneers and those sort of people. And the Japanese spotted one of our Bren Gun carriers bringing up supplies, and they started firing one of their 105 quite big shells at our positions. The battalion sergeant, the quarter company sergeant major, and the provost sergeant and the regimental sergeant major all went down to unload the carrier. And a shell landed beside them. And the sergeant major was killed, and the provost sergeant was killed, and the regimental sergeant major was so badly wounded that we didn't really think he'd live. In actual fact, he did. And these were our first casualties. And very grievous casualties too. Well, then after that, the war in the Arakan consisted of us gradually eliminating the Japanese outpost positions on these jungle-clad hilltops, which rose up, sort of pimples rose up out of the plain, until we came up against the main Jap position, Razabil was called. And when we came up against that, where the Japs were entrenched with their almost impregnable bunker positions, we were held up. And meanwhile, the Japanese, in their turn, had put in a flank attack against the 7th Division over the hill, and with a certain amount of success, and 7 Div found themselves involved in a battle there too. And it ended up with us having to send help across the Mayo Range before the Jap penetration was eliminated, which it duly was. But the 4th Battalion didn't take an active part. They just held the front opposite Razabil. And when all that was over, the brigade embarked on an ambitious outflanking movement round Razabil. The whole brigade marched at night. By first light, we were behind the Japanese position and encircling it. A heavy barrage from another brigade in front of Razabil heralded our actual attack from the rear. This was successful, and the Japanese were forced to leave their position, many of them being caught in their bunkers as we fought an odd battle in which the jungle caught fire, the dried jungle grass caught fire, and we made our way through blazing undergrowth to eliminate the last Japanese defenders in their bunkers. After this, we proceeded as a battalion to spearhead an advance on a position known as the Tunnels, which was midway along the track and which contained the remnants of what used to be a railway and it was now a road, on top of which the Japanese had fortified positions. Closing in on the Tunnels, B Company were detailed to attack along the top of the tunnel. And here was what amounted to a tragedy, because the artillery support, which had been laid on for their attack, descended on the men as they advanced across the open. The sad result of this was that 20 of the attacking force were killed outright and many more wounded. This was a great tragedy, but it does happen in war, and there was nothing really that we could do about it. I took members of the Pioneer Platoon to the foot of the hill to dig a communal grave, and under very unpleasant Japanese mortar fire, we buried the sad, shell-torn victims. And before another attack could be mounted, the battalion was ordered to withdraw because it was needed for fighting at a different part of the front.
When you took over positions where the Japanese had been driven out, what did you find in the way of Japanese bodies and possessions?
Well, any.
In this area, in the Arakan?
Well, I found that their right hand was often cut off, if they had had time to do that. I couldn't understand it at first, but it was discovered that they cremated the right hand where possible and sent it back to Japan to the relatives.
Yes. Did you find any possessions which they'd left behind?
Any?
Possessions.
Well, only flags and things like that. Flags and bugles. They were very naive, the Japs, in some ways. I mean, they blew bugles, waved flags.
So you said that you had to move off to the Northern Front.
Well, the truth was that the whole division was moving up to the Assam Front. Because the Japanese, it transpired, were now attacking in force against Imphal. And in order to reinforce Imphal, two brigades of the 5th Division were flown in to the Imphal plain, whilst our 161 Brigade was flown into Dimapur with the object of moving up to defend Kohima. No one, however, imagined at that time that Kohima was in any great danger, because we were told that there was only scattered Japanese covering forces coming through there. We thought, in fact, that it was really Kohima was unapproachable from Burma itself because of the trackless jungle intervening. How wrong we were. But not yet, because we didn't know. There was, however, a complete Japanese division heading for Kohima. Where innocence is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise. And we embarked on our aeroplanes at Doizari in quite a light-hearted manner. Actually, a lot of men had never flown in an aeroplane before. And we overloaded our particular Dakota with ammunition and stores to the extent that the pilot couldn't get his aeroplane off the ground and couldn't get the tail off the ground. American pilot, and he said, well, Sci fellas, he said, shift some of that junk further forward and then I'll try again, which we willingly did, and we shifted all the ammunition up past the middle of the plane and then he took off. It was a short flight, and we took off and we landed at Dimapur on a flooded airfield, and we wound our way up the earthen road to Kohima. We felt